Hello and welcome to Columboys, a podcast all about the hypnotic, spellbinding, excessively tanned world of Columbo. I'm Mac, and with me as always is Ben.
Hi, Mac.
Hello, Ben. This week we're taking a look at Season 4, Episode 6, A Deadly State of Mind. This episode stars George Hamilton as a tan psychiatrist slash hypnotist who murders his mistress and her husband, not in that order. Hamilton was a staple of 70s and 80s television, appearing on numerous sitcoms and in many, many of Johnny Carson's nightly monologues. Also appearing in this episode is Leslie Ann Warren, who appeared as Miss Scarlet in the criminally underappreciated Clue. Also appearing in his fourth guest spot, but only a second uncredited, is character actor Fred Draper. Previously appearing as the drunk and awful Murchison in Lovely But Lethal, Fred Draper also appeared in the John Cassavetes film Opening Night, which starred numerous Columbo guests, including Cassavetes himself, Gina Rowlands, Paul Stewart, John Finnegan, Columbo director Ben Gazzara, and it also features an uncredited cameo by Peter Falk playing himself.
Aw.
Yep.
Oh, that's really nice that they kind of had a get-together in a different film.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, okay. I think just Falk was kind of in with Cassavetes in general, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, that would scan. That would check out.
They had this sort of group in the, that they...
So George Hamilton did a lot of sitcom work? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, sitcom and soap. And that kind of stuff. He's on
Soap Dynasty. Sounds more on the mark to me, especially watching his sort of general performance, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
I don't mean that to bag on him. Just
I mean, it is a little bit of a...
I guess it comes across that way. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, it was just more that I noticed he was not very expressive. Like, he's clearly a very handsome man. I mean, but I just noticed from watching him perform that it takes a while before we get like a very sort of emotive performance out of him. Like he's...
Well, yeah.
I mean, in his facial expressions.
He's supposed to be playing a pretty subdued dude.
Right. And he's definitely that. And I don't mean that he's bad. I couldn't help but notice like, hey, his face is kind of, even when his voice is very expressive.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously that's like the first thing we hear, because that opening scene is the creepiest fucking opening scene I have seen so far.
It's really weird. It takes place in a black void.
Yep.
And it's...
With an IV drip of some unknown drugs.
Yes,
into...
which we later find out is probably the barbiturate slash something else. Kind of a truth serum-y sort of thing.
Yeah, super influency cocktail of...
Yes, that he's using as part of his hypnosis...
Research.
But he's also a psychiatrist, it seems.
Yeah.
It's a little
also wrote a book.
It's a little unclear exactly what he's doing.
As you mentioned when we were watching it, a lot of book writers or authors. authors, not book, are also apparently murderers. So
it seems strange because he's not a traditional psychiatrist. He's a researcher, but it seems like he has. Normal psychiatry,
but they
patients,
treat him like
of?
A psychiatrist.
It's a little strange.
And it's really unclear about that. The psychiatry episodes are also technically part of his research.
It might just be that we don't know enough about psychological research to really say one way or the other.
I think that's true.
But it is a little, in the episode at the very least, it's a little undefined exactly what he's doing, and certainly why he's doing it.
Oh, yeah.
There's no indication at all why he's doing what he's doing.
No, it really is just the setup for when he basically hypnotizes her into killing herself.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, if you're listening to this, I hope you've seen it or you don't care about spoiling it.
Spoiler alert to a thing I talked about 2 minutes ago in the intro.
Pretty much.
So the thing is that he's having an affair with this woman who's his patient slash research subject.
Nadja Donner.
Right.
Yep. Who is married to Carl Donner.
Carl Donner. They are going to get together, George Hamilton and this woman are going to get together for an illicit rendezvous. Mm-hmm. But the husband finds out about it and stays home.
Yeah. Well, it's at the beach house, which... It turns out we learn later they haven't used in like since Thanksgiving.
Right, which is why they're there, is it's out of the way.
Right.
But he's surprised the wife by showing up there and then made her forbid her from calling to warn the psychiatrist. So he shows up and after kind of a confrontation, They get it, start getting into a fight.
Yeah, they get into a fight, and he starts beating his wife, right. Which, let's just say, not real cool. Kind of.
Good. Not cool. Okay.
Yeah. I understand why, you know, why Hamilton would maybe grab, you know, like a poker from the fire and whack that guy over the head.
Sure.
You know, having said that, did kind of murder him.
I mean, he did murder him. That's right. There's no kind of about it. Yeah. He definitely did murder him. Yes. I agree. It is not good to hit anyone.
Right.
And your wife.
Especially not your spouse.
Not your spouse. Yeah. Definitely is bad.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do that. If you do that, you're a monster.
Yes.
Like, really. No,
don't
do it.
You don't necessarily deserve to be bludgeoned to death.
Right.
In that exact moment, but
correct.
That's for the courts to decide. That's not, you know, take it to the judge.
It definitely comes across as a crime of passion / maybe he hit him a little too hard.
Yeah, it's more in the sort of vein of an accidental death. Yeah. I mean, it's not accidental. He very deliberately hits him with a very hard metal object.
He could have just punched him in the back of the head.
It's more impulsive
than
accidental, certainly. It's more on the Robert Culp backhanding the woman into the table, like that sort of thing. Like it's definitely like a crime of passion, the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
So they together concoct concocts this story. The wife is very passive. This is the woman played by what is her name?
I don't know. You're the one who knows it.
I literally just said it.
Yeah. I mean, her character is Nadja Donner.
Leslie Ann Warren.
Leslie Ann Warren.
She's very passive and very sort of flighty and
she's very passive and extremely suggestible.
Yes. It certainly could not have been helped by being constantly drugged and hypnotized.
Yeah, being constantly drugged and hypnotized, and also hooking up with the doctor who's doing this too.
Right.
Yeah, those things. Yeah, probably.
Something we should have probably mentioned is that that earlier scene where they're, you know, the awkward hypnotizing thing, which involves a lot of you know, daddy, watch me, daddy.
Yeah,
I'm
daddy,
so
watch
proud
me
of
swimming.
You.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then,
yeah.
And then he
brings her back out of this and immediately smooches her. And it's like, oh,
that's a weird, it's a weird scene.
No, it's gross.
It's a weird scene in multiple definitions of the word scene.
Yeah. In fairness, credit to the writing and directing of this, like it immediately establishes, oh, all of this is gross
Something's
and awful.
Something's weird and should not be happening right now. So they do concoct this scene, where a couple of burglars broke in and held them at gunpoint. And then,
He takes her jewelry and takes the wallet.
They were going to rob him. And then he fought back and then they beat him to death or something like that.
Right.
Then Columbo comes in, starts investigating, and then the second murder is he's kind of figured out that the story was bullshit, and sort of to cover that up, George Hamilton hypnotizes her into thinking she's going swimming. Again, it's a callback to that.
Going
to
jump into the pool.
She's going to jump into the pool. Daddy
from
will be so
five
proud
stories
of you.
Up.
It's very weird.
Yep.
There is a pool, but she just jumps down and lands on the pavement.
Yeah, missed it by that much.
But she jumps out naked.
Yeah.
And she folds all her clothes and puts them in a little pile.
Right, as if she were going swimming.
Yes. That's Columbo's clue that something is wrong with that.
Yep.
I think that this is a pretty good episode.
Yeah, honestly, I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah. This is the last episode of the fourth season. We're now four whole seasons in. They're getting shorter and shorter. So each episode or each season for the next couple will be six.
Oh, the seasons are fewer.
The seasons
are
getting
shorter.
You
meant the length. And I was like, no, they seem
the
normal.
I mean, they'll say the same length throughout the entire run, but the seasons are getting shorter. And then we get into the weird specials thing. And I feel like the attribution of seasons at that point is completely arbitrary. They're just
They're just kind of doing it after the fact.
Yeah, because I don't know. Like the last season is six specials over like
20 years? I don't know.
It's like 8 years.
Oh.
So it's weird, you know? Yeah. And so it doesn't really like make any sense, but...
That's like Venture Brothers seasons.
But this is back when it was like a regular show on TV. Like they would do the, they were still doing the mystery movie and circulating. So they came out with a regularity that you could conceivably call these seasons. And, you know, they would
especially
sign.
Since they would maybe be staggered with other things in that mystery.
And I believe that he was, you know, Peter Falk was in contracts and he was contracted to do this many episodes and that was the season.
Right.
So that, you know, that's kind of where we're still at. But I think that, you know, season four's been pretty consistent, I would say. Definitely have some had some really good episodes.
I don't think we've had any where I was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
No.
We
haven't really had any Columbos where they've been the worst thing.
No. But four hasn't been too bad. Yeah. You know, we've had like the episode on the cruise ship, you know, has a lot of good things going for it, but doesn't totally cohere.
Because of the weird shooting and the sort of laconic tone and pace of it. Yeah.
There's
sure.
bits of it that don't quite, you know, but at the same time, we got that episode with Patrick McGoohan and the Citadel, which is just a banger. Yeah. Like,
I think
there's good stuff in
this
there.
This is a good, real basic Columbo episode, you know? It's like kind of no frills. It's kind of, you know,
it's
what you're
solid.
Getting. It's solid.
It's solid. It's a crime of passion instead of a planned murder, but it's also a very clever murderer.
Yeah.
And so you do get that little back and forth and you get the kind of tension and the cockiness. And so that sort of makes the payoff at the end a little better.
But it doesn't have that sort of tension or explosive quality of some of the other episodes of the Robert Culp. It doesn't really.
Yeah, but also let's be fair. That's Robert Culp.
I mean,
Hamilton doesn't read as well as Culp when it comes to that sort of
absolutely
immediate charm.
It's not the this. It's just that their tension of the writing is not as strong. It's very sort of jovial. For most of it, it's a lot of them being very friendly right up until the end, and like the dinner party scene, which is nice. I mean,
I actually really like that scene.
I think we were both kind of apprehensive, because we've definitely seen Columbo in a social situation, and it gets very weird and awkward, and tends to drag out.
It becomes like, is this the comic relief? But this one actually,
no, it's really great because it's so he goes over to the doctor's house, and the doctor is having a dinner party with colleagues, other doctors. Right. And their spouses. And they're all sort of sitting around, like, just talking.
They're
just
drinking
having a nod.
Eating hors d'oeuvres.
It's not work-related. Yeah. It does not relate to the case at all. They're just having a little dinner. And Columbo just starts talking about... He sits down and they ask him about the case. And he just starts talking about various things and little inconsistencies and just laying it out in a very sort of basic way. It doesn't sound interesting if you say it like that.
Right.
But because... It has the tension of a social event where everyone's just sort of being nice and friendly and having a conversation.
Yep.
But at the same time, you can also tell he's like tightening.
Yeah.
He's
needling Hamilton, and so while everyone that is hanging out in Hamilton's house is like into helping Columbo like make sense of this and ask him about the inconsistencies. You can see it just building on Hamilton's face.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then to top it off, he calls Nadja basically to make her kill herself
while
he's looking right at Columbo.
Right.
And so it's this great little moment where, you know, immediately I'm like, please have them check the phone records.
Yeah. They did introduce that they could check phone records.
Quite a while back.
A couple seasons back. And that has not ever come back.
Not really. Not strongly. No. I mean, they do check it here, but it's not the solve by any shake. It's just kind of another.
I don't think that they even do check it.
They do. No. He says. Yeah.
No, he says that he can't. That he knows that there was a call because the thing was off the hook. He doesn't say that we have phone records. He doesn't. Oh, I was listening specifically for it.
That's fair.
So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, that would be kind of a basic thing.
Yeah.
There, you know, at the end, he doesn't really prove that the guy killed him. All he really has proved is that the guy was there.
He was definitively there.
But that, again, does not necessarily mean he killed him. It definitely means... something happened and this guy probably knows more, but that's not a conviction. I mean,
well,
it's hard to say
know.
Because it's again,
it's not a Hollywood conviction.
It's not
maybe,
a Hollywood,
but
well, I mean, it's, well, it's like, it, I will tell you, having had some experience with trial lawyers, as
okay,
both of my parents right, are fair. Trial lawyers, I know a little bit. I don't know a ton. I'm not a lawyer by any means, but I do know that you generally want, if you are prosecuting someone, you generally want more conclusive evidence than this person was present
at the
time, yeah. Because especially when you have another witness who has committed suicide, even though, yes, she could have been hypnotized. That is a difficult thing to prove again.
Right, it's a bit of a walk.
There is a lot of this that is sort of like he could have done it. They've definitely have not proven beyond a reasonable doubt that he did do it.
They've just gotten him to crack in a room with like four witnesses.
They could definitely get an indictment from a grand jury.
Yeah,
for sure. They could definitely do that, but it would be, I think, difficult to prove this case without a little more information that he actually committed the murder. That's just my personal opinion. Again, I am not a law professional, but...
No, but it's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. It's still, you know, in the Columbo... I mean, my beef with the end is really just the we didn't get the reaction shot after Columbo's like, oh, I fucking got you.
I it's so irritating that it is sort of a thing with the editing of all of these.
Yeah.
Is that the reaction is more rare than the just Columbo says we got you freeze frame end with nothing else, and it sucks because you kind of want that release, right?
Yeah, like it's like closure for you.
Yeah,
like you get to see them go, oh, I'm fucking nicked.
You want to you pull out, or like, you know, Columbo sits down and lights a cigar or something like that. You know, you want a little bit of like this has ended,
right?
But instead, it's like it just takes you all the way up, and then it's like, yep,
yeah.
It just kind of pushes you off the edge, like all right, you're done. You got it. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And
no, I agree.
It's fine. Like it's not,
okay.
I'm not mad about it, but it is just kind of like, oh, you know,
I just like that button.
A screenplay term. There's no falling action.
Right.
Which is there's no aftermath. And generally in like Sid Field's screenplay 101 kind of thing, you want to rise up and then you want to have a climax, and then you have the falling action, which is everyone sort of reacts to the thing.
Everyone gets to exhale.
And I think that's an important part of sort of processing a story is getting that sort of sense of completion. And part of completion is everyone in the story agreeing that something has ended. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because what you're essentially getting is right up to the end, and then something else could happen. Like he could just go like, no, that didn't happen, and then walk off, and it's like, okay. Well, all right.
Yeah.
So because it doesn't have that, it does leave a little ambiguity. Not necessarily a huge amount, because he's still under, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not the worst like freeze frame we've gotten.
No.
I'm sure it's not the worst we'll get in the future either, but yeah.
Oh, they get a lot more into falling action later, actually.
Oh.
There's a lot more, like, because it becomes a lot more about Columbo.
Okay.
When it transitions into the later episodes.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but I think in general there's some really good stuff. I like when Columbo sits down. There's a really great scene early on, right after the fake burglary. When he's gotten statement from Leslie Ann Warren, and he goes over to the couch where she was sitting.
Yeah, his like Frankenstein's monster monologue.
And he sits on the couch and he lights a cigar and he just starts like going,
yeah, he just kind of starts grunting and pointing at, like he's walking himself through the whole thing. And
then
it's really.
And then at the end, he just goes, possibly.
Yeah.
Like,
just to himself.
That could have happened that way.
Yeah.
But it's very clear, I think, from that moment that it doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, he's like,
walking through it. It doesn't quite work. But it's a really great, it's another great, you know, Peter Falk is really good at these sort of like nonverbal.
Yeah.
Taking you, I think the best thing about him is that he's very good at showing his work.
Yes.
You know what I mean? He's very good at showing you kind of what he's thinking in a way that doesn't seem staged or performative.
He's a very good physical actor.
Yeah.
Like, and it's obviously that's not the only part of his acting that he's really good at, but just it carries so much in this show because so much of it is watching him think.
Right.
And so for him, you know, if he weren't that expressive, yeah. You know, and again, Hamilton is not that kind of, like, he's not a very physical actor in the same way. And yeah. And those two are a really interesting juxtaposition, because it's not that he's a bad actor. It's just that is not his skill set, but it really, really shines.
And it's a credit to the directing and the editing and, like, the inserting cutaways and showing, yep. like, you know, making sure that you get sort of enough coverage of him manipulating items or, like, showing what he's looking at and putting it in the right moment so that you know why yeah. he's looking at a thing, even if he's not saying anything.
Right.
It's, which is really good. And it's a lot better, I think, than the Holmes and Watson or the Poirot and Hastings thing of what have you got there?
Right.
You know, Holmes.
Yeah, having the foil to. I mean, yeah. and that's sort of the thing that sets Columbo apart from those other detective shows. I mean, you know, Poirot is sometimes a little different when yeah. he has episodes without Hastings, for example. But
right.
And but Columbo is entirely by himself.
Yeah, I mean, we do have this is an episode that has a reintroduction of Bruno Kirby's character, who this is actually one of the few recurring characters is Bruno Kirby's Sergeant George Kramer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Who appeared previously at the Citadel, and I think he was in one other one.
Right.
This is actually a recurring guy, but he does a little bit sort of play that
just a little.
But it's more he's more giving information to Columbo than asking Columbo what he's thinking.
Yeah, he doesn't show up and, like, I'm the dummy, explain it to me. And he's just like, hey, we just found this out.
Yeah, and more often than not, he doesn't care.
Oh,
Like, Columbo is trying to talk to him about something, like, very small.
He's super checked out.
He's like, I have other things I have to worry about right now.
Listen, I'm just trying to do you a solid. I do not give a shit.
Which is good, because, again, it sort of gets around that Holmes and Watson, you know, oh, if he could have done this, then why wasn't his shoe?
Right.
And in a lot of ways, the murderer, the culprit, is the Watson.
Yes.
That's sort of one of the things about Columbo is that he shows his work to the murderer. He doesn't show his work to the police or an assistant or something like that.
Yeah.
Which I think is really great.
No, it is. And it's really wonderful, because it's also part of the charm of that cat and mouse play between the two, as the murderer attempts to misdirect him. And it's like, oh, buddy, what are you doing? Like, that is the opposite of what you should do with this guy.
Yeah.
But back to your point about his physical acting, like, one of the things that's really marvelous about that and the way that it is shot and edited is that it means that there is so much visual storytelling rather than just pure raw exposition.
Yeah.
And that is part of what makes this such a joy to watch as a series.
Right. And I think that's why we like it.
That's definitely a big part. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's what makes it interesting, I think, more from episode to episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Way.
But that's something that's not necessarily easy to explain on a podcast without just doing what we've done and, like, talking about how it's nice.
The,
like,
least visual of all possible mediums.
Exactly. But it is very good and it is something that you notice more, I think, when you watch these the way we're doing, like, you know, over the weeks in a critical way.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have something fashion you wanted to talk about, I'm guessing?
Actually, quite a bit. and it is mostly about George Hamilton. I'm just going to... So I just want to lay a little foundation. That is not strictly related to George Hamilton, but, like, in the older era of, like, Hollywood men, like, you know, and of course, the moment I say that, I blank on several of them, but but the thing that I want to get at is a lot of Hollywood stars back in the day clothed themselves. It wasn't like a costumer's thing per se.
When they would appear in shows.
When they would appear in film and television, whatever.
I think that's more common in television shows than we necessarily know now as well.
Yeah, yeah. And with George Hamilton, I get the very strong sense that this is entirely his fucking wardrobe.
Sure, sure.
Like, it really scans from the bits that I know about him. For example, that, like, our boy knows how to sew.
And does he?
He does.
Yeah.
Because apparently he has like brought a change of buttons for his blazers.
Really?
When he has gone on trips or whatever. That's and swapped them out for events that, you know, like where like it's more appropriate
to have.
He needs
a brass button?
Yeah. Interesting. Seriously.
That's cool.
Yeah. It was one of those bits that like you hear that and it kind of sticks. But anyway, so yeah, I did want to mention some of his outfits. I mean, generally speaking, all of his suits have the same kind of cut where like they're clearly well fitted to him. They have the very broad lapels.
Yeah.
They're all very, I mean, he looks very good in all of them.
They've got that little too tight sort of 70s, not in like in a bad way, but like in a way where everything sort of,
well, so there's one scene where, well, they're very, the waist suppression is extremely strong.
Right.
And there's a scene where, there's a great example, because it's not him, but it's when he brings the guy into the lab and then looks out the window and sees Columbo checking out his tires.
Right.
But the guy he brings in, his jacket is too snug around the midsection because it's pulling everywhere. Whereas on Hamilton,
yeah,
they're snug, but they're fitted. Like they don't pull so tight that you can kind of see it straining.
Yeah.
And that's the important difference.
But I think they fit very tight, but they also sort of, they feel like they go up. Like it moves his top, his chest area up. Like it always sort of feels like it's puffed out. It's very hard for me to describe.
No. I know what you mean.
But like the lapels always seem like they're kind of popped outward a little bit, just from the tension.
Yeah,
of
there's
the suit.
A little bit of that tension where it causes the lapels and the chest to arc a touch.
Yeah, not in a way that looks bad, but just in a way that like looks, it's noticeable.
It's a very 70s cut for sure. But yeah, like his, you know, when we see him in the terrifying dark room at the beginning, you know, he's got like a navy suit on, he's got a club tie on, and he is consistently in this wearing a collar pin, which is like a safety pin that pins the two points of the collar together and pushes the knot of the tie forward.
Right. I'm not a big fan of that look personally.
It's, you know what, do you know Boardwalk Empire?
I know of it.
Yeah, that kind of thing is more that era.
The 30s. Kind of.
And so it really does feel like this is part of Hamilton's, because he's always been a well-dressed man.
It's a little bit of a throwback.
Yeah. It's just one of those where it sticks out a little bit. Yeah. And that's another thing.
I mean, that's the point of it, right?
Right. And that's part of why I think it's his wardrobe. But so there's that. And he wears bit loafers most of the time. The one exception is when he does the murder.
He's dressed very casually for the murder.
Right. Well, he's got an amazing trench coat, actually, which is a waxed trench coat. Like it's a waxed cotton trench coat.
You said he was wearing suede pants?
Yeah, he's wearing like suede pants and he's got a really great safari like shirt jacket that is like belted and has like the four pockets and everything. And then later
that's his fucking clothes.
Oh yeah.
Because he's worn that to Bone Down.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well then when he's in his house, he's wearing like a brown leather shirt jacket.
Yeah.
And it's only got like the two chest pockets. It doesn't have like the, you know, the hip pockets.
Right.
But it's still that same kind of style of swagger, you know, and he wears them like with the turtleneck under and that whole thing. But yeah, the one time that he's not wearing those, he's wearing like driving moccasins.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, then he has that amazing brown herringbone suit, which is really good. And then the last thing, like during the catch, he's wearing a Prince of Wales check. But again, these are all the exact same cut and they fit him exactly the same way across the board. Like it's very clearly his wardrobe.
Yeah.
And that is mostly what I wanted to point out, because it's a good wardrobe and he looks good in it.
I had a weird, this is not necessarily fashion, but it was in my mind. So Bruno Kirby, the detective, is wearing
That fucking
sergeant.
Polka dot
he's
tie?
Wearing the worst tie.
Doesn't fit anything else he's wearing.
It's a black tie with red polka dots. Ugh. He's wearing a brown suit, I think.
And like a multi-striped shirt.
Yeah, it's bad.
Don't do that.
Nonsense and nothing. But I sort of like was on my phone for a second when they transitioned to the next scene, and they started talking about tires and the tread of tires. But I wasn't paying attention. I thought they were talking about ties, and I thought they was like saying, "Oh, he's got a wide tie." All these guys got wide ties. But
this guy's got a skinny tie.
Like me, I got a skinny tie for like a European tie, and I was like, "What is happening right now? Nope. Why is this?" But it turned out that it was just so part of the how he knows that George Hamilton was there is that there were these skinny tire tracks, which is more common in a European car than an American car. American cars have wider tires.
Yep.
And Colombo has, as he says multiple times, a French car. It's a European car. This other guy drives a Mercedes. Mercedes. Yeah, that's what the fake blind guy says at the end. Should we talk about the catch real quick?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, yeah. Why not? We're doing a podcast. What the fuck? So they have it turns out they have a witness, but according to Bruno Kirby, the guy is blind.
Yep.
So,
but he has a Braille watch.
He has a Braille watch.
So he can post the time
of the murder, which means that. But he knows that it happened earlier.
Right.
So at the very least, he knows that. Columbo concocts this scene, and I think it's meant to be obvious to the audience as well.
Oh yeah.
And so there's this scene. It's a good fake out. This scene where George Hamilton comes over to the murder house. Is it the murder house?
Yeah. Yep.
And they're waiting there with this guy who walks in, walks over to the couch, sits down.
Yep. In this very suspicious, like, oh, you're clearly
very halting.
You're clearly a blind man pretending to
not be able to see. Yes. And you've worked out this sort of, you know, way where he asks Columbo if he needs a thing and like hands him the matches and doesn't like his head doesn't move around a lot.
Yeah.
This is the actor who played Murchison. That we talked about. Yeah, it's the same guy. George Hamilton spots it right away and is like, this is very funny.
Yeah, very funny. He's a blind guy.
But he's blind. And
then brings him a magazine and says, here, read from this. And then, of course, he can.
He can.
And that's the point where Hamilton gets more and more.
Hamilton freaks out and
says, no, he was blind.
He's got to be blind. And it turns out that the blind man is the brother of this person. And they look kind of similar.
They both have a mustache. Right.
So he saw this other guy who had the dog and is blind.
Yep. Has the very dark glasses.
And that's why he was so convinced that this guy... Again, this is incredibly shaky.
Yeah, it's a little shaky.
Because all we have done for sure is that this guy thought this guy was blind and he's not blind.
Right. Well, it's like at best you could maybe go for the argument about consciousness of guilt.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's why this episode ended so quickly. They're like, end it quick so they don't have time to think about it.
Yeah, yeah. And credits. Yeah.
Because it definitely has that feeling of like kind of rush, like, we got him. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so definitely there are some police departments that function like that. Like, oh, we got enough to make an arrest. Let's just arrest this guy and get out of here.
Let's just arrest him. And then once we have him in the slammer, we'll just
worry about it later.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just hit him a couple times till he confesses. That's not really above board.
Oh, fun. But Columbo cops are not like that. They're all honor roll people because that's how television works.
That's how Columbo works. Not all television.
That's true.
Yeah. Well... Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the catch, all right.
I think it's a real good episode. It's not a standout, you know?
It's not the best, but it's a solid episode.
Don't rush out and buy it on VOD, but if you've already bought the box set, you might as well.
Yeah, if you got the box set, you don't need to skip this one, I guess, just keep going through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worth watching.
Making your way downtown.
Looking at a young Hamilton before he turns a disturbing color.
Before he pan-seared himself.
Yeah. Can we talk about that?
I feel uncomfortable talking about it, honestly.
No, that's fair.
I mean, he definitely, for a lot of years, had this very golden, crispy look to him. You know.
I get a lot of sun.
Yeah, and it was a joke, and for a good reason. The man was brown. Brown in a way that's not natural for a human being to be.
Right.
He's a guy who clearly likes being out in the sun and tanning himself, and it's very bad for your skin.
Yeah, it was definitely you have spent too much time in the sun for your natural skin pigment.
Yeah, definitely very similar to, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, but the guy from the gym episode, that sort of workout.
That
70s tone of, I think Jim Connors was maybe, or... No, I don't remember. Neither of us are going to remember.
I'm not good with these names. That's why Mac does all of that.
That's right. But it's that 70s, like, un you know, you're wearing tanning cream. Like, you're not right. trying to block sun. You're trying to get,
you're trying to accelerate the process.
Yeah.
And that's give me all the cancer.
That's why a lot of these people did end up with skin cancer because they just didn't think about
They cranked it to fucking 11 is what they
did. And, you know, George Hamilton is still alive, but, you know, he's paying the price, I think, these days for being out in the sun.
He's still super tan, right?
He's very tan. He's upsettingly tan.
God love him.
Yeah. He's still out there. Still out there.
I've seen him.
George Hamilton.
Still like seeing him in stuff. I mean, it's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. I think the last thing that I saw him in was the Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was the extra crispy colonel. Because he's...
Oh.
Yeah, you see, because he's extra crispy. It's the joke.
Okay,
It made me very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm passing that on to you.
I'm done now.
Okay, good. What a good energy to end our show on.
Now I haven't seen it, but I can just picture his skin tone against the colonel suit, and
it's something. It's really something out there. I'm very excited about next season. We're heading season five.
Yep. Already.
There's some good stuff. We got Janet Leigh. We got another McGoohan in the run.
I can't wait.
There have been a little weird tension where I've not wanted to talk with you at all about the episodes before they happen, but I feel like talking about upcoming guest stars is not a big
guest
deal.
Guest is one thing.
I mean, we got Patrick McGoohan's coming back. We got Leslie Nielsen as a guest star, not, you know, as kind of one of the characters. And just some great performances. This next episode, I'm really looking forward to. I feel like kind of something I maybe want to start doing is announcing the next episode at the end of the thing.
Fair.
So people kind of have
know what's coming.
Know what's coming and what we're going to be talking about. The next episode
Tune in next week. Well, next bi week.
Next 2 weeks.
Yep.
Forgotten Lady, and that's starring Janet Leigh.
All right.
And it's a great one. So we'll
looking forward
see
to
you,
it.
See you then. That has been Columbo's. I'm Mac.
Columbo's. One more time.
This has been. I'm just making it harder to edit. Thanks for listening. This has been Columbo's. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And one more thing.
Yeah.
Our podcast is called Columboys, not Columbos. That doesn't make any sense.
Hey, at least it's not Columbozos.
Is that a better name? That might be a better name than Columboys.
It's a more accurate name.
That's very true.
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.